Well, good evening, listeners, and welcome to show 10. This is the second part of the special that we're doing on press photographers, press photography, and the legend that is Dave Lowndes, my dear friend and head press photographer for the Peterborough Telegraph. Welcome again, Dave. Lovely to see you.
Good evening, Nick. Good evening, listeners.
Are you well?
Spot on. Absolutely spot on. I had a great day today.
So. Been good, has it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about your week. How's things, you know? What have you been up to?
Well, the weekend was rain.
Yeah.
I covered cricket, got rained on. I covered football, got absolutely drenched. I went to a party and stepped outside and got drenched for a third time.
Again?
So, it was a bit of a wet weekend.
Right.
But things have improved, I must admit. I had a bit of fun today.
What have you been doing today?
Well, Peterborough Cathedral how do I describe this? They are showing, but there's an exhibition at Peterborough Cathedral on Star Wars.
Oh, okay.
So they organised a press call today and supplied us with 14 or 15 reenactors, all dressed in Star Wars kit.
Yeah.
Who were very, very good, very patient, and very amenable. So we got some great pictures.
Right. So what's the exhibition about? I mean, obviously Star Wars. But...
Yeah, it's called, I've forgotten.
It's something galaxies,
isn't it? And I can't think what the first word was. Not unknown galaxies. It's specifically... Star Wars stuff. So I'm sure it'll go really well. But as I said, we had a good day. It's great when you've got people who want to work with you.
Yeah, just give us a bit of a rough on what you actually shot and you know how the shots were kind of put together.
I first of all started. I mean, it's almost like doing a wedding. In as much that you start with a few people and then you end up at the end of your shoot with more or less everybody on the picture. So I started off with Chewbacca, Skywalker, Princess Leia, and Han Solo.
Right.
Did a few photographs of them outside the West Front. Then moved on to Darth Vader and Stormtroopers. After that, the vice dean of the cathedral came out, so I played around with him and Chewbacca for a few minutes. And then I took them all into the cathedral, and we filled up the choir stalls with them all standing there with hymn books in their hands and whatnot.
Oh, that sounds a nice shot.
Yeah, it was quite nice, different. And that was about it, really.
So where did you go after that? You know, was it a quiet day today, or was it a busy day?
No, I had. It's the end of term. It's the last day of school today before the school holidays.
Right.
So I had two different head teachers retiring. So I went to see both of those. There's some serious roadworks starting today in Peterborough on the parkway, so I had to go.
That'll make a change, won't it? Knocking some shit down.
Yeah, it's going to be hell on earth for about 6 months.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Where's that for Peterborough? Well, for people who are listening to this who are local to Peterborough or live in Peterborough, and I know that there are a few followers of the podcast that do that. Where's that going on? Give a bit of a traffic report.
Well, it's Junction 3A of the Fletton Parkway, which is the turn-offs to Hampton.
Okay.
So basically speaking, you just have to going to carry on down the parkway and come off at the next roundabout and next slipway, turn round, come back, and you know.
So let me guess, are they building houses?
No, they're actually going to put in an extra lane, as they have done at Thorpe Wood and...
Okay.
An extra lane to filter the traffic off.
Right.
Better. So
tell me a bit more, of your... I know quite a bit of this, but a bit of a history. Born and bred where?
Born and bred, Stoke-on-Trent. I'm a Stokey.
How did you come to Peterborough?
Well, As I mentioned in the last programme, my Uncle Graham was my sort of inspiration, really. I mean, I always wanted to be a press photographer.
Right.
And I recognised that I'd never get a job on the Evening Sentinel, which is the local paper in Stoke, because there were these buggers who were there and had been there for bloody years and weren't moving on.
So you had to wait for some bugger to die.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Co-op to tip up, and then there was a job.
Yeah.
Vacancy.
So I was quite lucky that my parents decided to come to Peterborough because my old man used to work in a shoe factory in Stoke.
Yeah.
I mean, he was lucky because in those days you either worked down the pit or you came home black.
Right.
Or you worked in what we call the pot banks, the pottery industry, and you came home covered in white dust.
Right.
My old man, as I say, worked in a shoe factory, so he was all right. When the shoe factory closed down, he got a job at Perkins.
Oh, right, okay.
So
that's Perkins Engines Eastfield, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So that's how I ended up in Peterborough, yeah.
So what age were you when you came to Borough?
16.
Okay. So you're done with school, had you,
no,
by the time you got to Peterborough?
No, I did sort of A levels at the Deakins School.
Oh, okay, you went to Deakins
when it was a boys.
Yeah,
boys school.
Yeah, it's a bit of a gas, isn't it? Boys only school. I mean, what's that about?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was strange. In certain, I do remember one day I got caught smoking out of school.
Right.
In school uniform, but out of school. So for that. It's like a slipper over the headmaster's desk in those days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd have heard them bastards.
Yeah. But there you go. Yeah. So after A levels, I got a job as a trainee reporter.
Yeah.
On the Peterborough Standard.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to be a trainee reporter, but it was, you just wanted to get into newspapers.
Yeah.
I spent 18 months there. The editor decided that I'd never make a journalist as long as I got a hole in my arse.
Right.
And told me that.
Okay.
So I then spent a couple of months working for my uncle, who was an electrical engineer. And then I got a job on the Telegram.
Right.
And quite funnily enough, some years later, by which time I was deputy chief photographer, that editor from the Peterborough Standard lost his job because the newspaper had folded.
Yeah.
And he got a job on the Telegraph as well.
Right.
As a deputy head of department. So right. I was level with him.
Okie dokie.
So I got my own
back. Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
I got him wet a few times and made him go out in the cold. Because as you remembered, unlike most newspapers where a reporter goes out with a photographer and the reporter's in charge, at the Telegraph, because of Jack Brindley, the photographer was in charge.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah. So, as I say, I've been there ever since.
Do you like Peterborough?
Yeah. Well, Peterborough's okay, but when we started, Peterborough was a small town, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you knew everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody knew you, and you didn't have to go far to, you spent an awful lot of time working in the city centre.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't going out to Wisbeach or Stamford or Oundle or whatever, so, yeah, it was a nice, cosy little town, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. It was it weren't a bad place to be brought up, I don't think. We're not talking, certainly, the rock centre of the eastern world, I'll say, in respect of eastern part of the country. But, I don't think it was a bad place to grow up. I always thought that Peterborough had got too much suburb, not enough city.
Yeah.
I think that was my kind of complaint. But, no, I mean, I had some very, very happy years here. Mm. Would I move back? No, I don't think so, Dave. It's lost anything that it really had, I think. You've got to really scrat around, haven't you, to find the historical part of it that we grew up in.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I mean, we still remember that where those places were, but a lot of people Wouldn't have a clue.
No, it's gone. Because I know you spend a lot of time in Devon, don't you? You're a big mariner. Would that be the right word? You've got several boats or a couple of boats.
I've got an offshore cruiser in Devon. Having said owner, I only own half of that boat.
Okay.
And then I have a...
Which half, do you know?
The crap up. No.
The bit below the ceiling.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the one bit you can't see. Yeah, good one, Nick. I enjoyed that. So I own half of that. And then I've got a boat on the Neen as well.
Oh, really? You got one on the Neen?
Yeah, which is my...
Oh, wonderful. I didn't know about that.
It's nice, because when I finish... I mean, I can only go to Devon... 5 or 6 times a year.
Yeah, it's a bit of a poke, isn't it, from Borough?
Yeah.
Holy shit, yeah.
So, you know, if I'm finished at 3:30 in the afternoon and it's a nice day, then I get the dogs or we'll go down and spend the rest of the evening on the boat or...
Have a few pops and a bit of leisure time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Luckily, I've got a chalet down there as well.
Have you? Fucking hell, you've got property all over the place, man. Some of it moves, some of it don't.
It's only a wooden fancy wooden shed, yeah.
No wrong with a fancy wooden shed.
Yeah, I've got a lot of wooden sheds, really, haven't I?
You've got a collection in your garden, haven't you? Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
It's a bit like going to, you know, out of town, you know, kind of leisure park or something, get
shed,
it?
Shed
glamping
city.
Gaff going on in your back garden.
Yeah. But... yeah, boating's nice. Boating's very relaxing. If somebody comes out in the boat with me, generally speaking, they'll come back and say, "Oh, it was really, really relaxing."
Good gig.
Yeah.
You take it out to sea, obviously, and do all hazardous things like that, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Going
out to sea is a different kettle of fish. It's a bit rougher.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's quite exciting.
Yeah.
And I must admit, I mean, the seagoing boat goes an awful lot faster than the river boat does.
Yeah.
An awful lot faster, so. But, you know, it's, you know, and I spent, a few days down there recently, and, I've driven 250 miles to get there.
Yeah.
And if it's rough, well, you still got to go out.
Of course you have, yeah. You got to tick a box, ain't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But by God, it's lovely when you've got a calm sea, you know, it's really, really nice.
So, what sea are we talking about there?
English Channel.
Channel. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Portland.
So, how far are you from the Solent? And, you know...
Quite a long way, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my sort of sailing capacity, as it were, is between Exeter and Dartmouth, really.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I don't go any much further than... either side of those two places.
Right.
So, yeah.
Something that does fascinate me is that you've taken this kind of photography thing to another level, and literally another level, because you're big time into, astrology photography?
No.
No?
That's...
Tell me what it is.
Deep sky astrophotography.
Okay. Tell us about that, Dave. Now, that's heavy shit, isn't it, really?
Well, it's photographing galaxies, nebula, gas conglomerations, deep in hundreds of light years away.
In space?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's the problem was, I got involved in this during COVID, because in COVID my job was very tedious. Because I'm taking pictures of one man, and then you've got a 2 meter gap, and then another man, and then the pictures were rubbish.
Right.
And I said to a friend of mine, I'm going to have to find something else to do. I can't put up with this crap for the next 6 months. You know, got to find something to make the cogs work.
Yeah.
So, I've got a friend. His name's James, and he's what I call my astro buddy.
Right.
And we have exactly the same equipment. If we want to, we can join pool our pictures together.
Yeah.
Because the whole point about astrophotography is it takes hours to collect. They don't call it. We'd call it, collecting light. They call it collecting data.
Okay.
So basically, you're taking a photograph of, let's say, I'm going to do the Andromeda Galaxy. I probably take photographs all night and do that for 3 or 4 nights.
Yeah.
And then stack them all together.
Right.
To make one image.
Yeah, because it's a sandwich type of thing. And the technique is, I know you've only lightly touched on this when we've caught up, you know, kind of socially. But it's a totally different process. Is it totally different process? I suppose the only thing that comes close to it is a layering process, you know, Photoshop, Lightroom, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But that's basically what it is, isn't it? How many kind of frames would you shoot on a normal night?
Oh, only about 30.
Right.
But they are 10-minute exposures.
Yeah.
So, and there are certain breaks because every now and again the equipment will refocus itself.
Right.
And recalibrate itself and this and this. So, yeah, in a night, 30 pictures. And then the next night, another 30, and the next night, another 30, and then you ram them all together.
Okay, so you probably end up with, 120 shots by the end of the week, and you'll then ram them all together to make one finished image, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you do any post-production on that at all?
Blimey, yeah, post-production is, it's just unbelievable these days. First of all, one of the difficulties of taking, as you know, the longer you take with an exposure, the more noise, what we used to call grain, appears, doesn't it? So to compensate for that, the camera actually runs at minus 20 degrees.
Okay, does it really?
And cools the sensor right down again.
Right.
That's where noise appears, when the sensor warms up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, you cool the sensor right down, and then your sort of post-production stuff comes in, and I have a special program which removes noise completely.
Right.
It's absolutely fantastic. And there are another couple of sort of bolt-ons to the software which sharpen things up a little bit.
Right.
But not, I mean, this is a bit technical, but if we put sharpener on a picture, it puts a line round the image, doesn't it? To make it appear sharper.
Yeah.
Well, this thing that I've got has got AI in it.
Oh, okay.
And it makes all the stars round and, does a brilliant job of sharpening things.
Right. So is that a true representation of what you've actually taken and seen?
Well, the thing is, if you look through a telescope and you looked at, for instance, Andromeda, you would see a sort of white, fuzzy glow in the sky.
Okay.
If I look at Andromeda and photograph it, I can then introduce colours into it.
Oh, okay.
But nobody can say, you've got them colours wrong, or nobody knows.
No.
It's to a certain extent, it becomes a bit of an art form.
Yeah, of course. License to create, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, you can, for instance, there's another very famous picture done of what's called the Horsehead Nebula.
Yeah.
Now, that's red. But my friend James decided he didn't like it red, and he's turned it to yellow and blue.
Oh, okay.
But nobody can say you got that wrong.
No.
Because nobody knows.
No.
Yeah, I mean, you could turn it upside down, and people could say you got that upside down, so prove it.
And it's a bit too far to have a walk and have a look, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. But it's fascinating, but it's time consuming.
Yeah, I bet it is. Mm. So have you? Does this come from a long term interest in, we'll say, space travel or astrology? Yeah. Is that the right word? Astronomy.
Astronomy. Astronomy is what I'm doing. Astrology is. It's if you're you're an Aryan or a Cancer or
forgive me, yeah, I got that bit
I've always been really interested in astronomy. And it obviously, you know, just the same as me, when we were kids, we had interests. Yep. When you went into photography, you had photography.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
You hadn't got time for anything else.
No.
You know, well, we tried to have time for a bit of drinking and a bit of association with the female sex, obviously. Yeah. But you were just working. And now I'm at a stage where I think, no, sod that, I want to do something else as well. So it came back, you know. I've always been interested in it. And I mean, for instance, a little while ago, I don't know, time flies, probably 10, 15 years ago, I managed to interview James Irwin.
Who was
Apollo 15.
Fantastic.
So he was, because only 12 men have walked on the moon.
Yeah.
He was one of them, obviously.
Fantastic. Where was that?
Now, you'll never believe this. You will never believe it. It was at Park Road Baptist Church.
Really?
Yeah. Having gone to the moon, when he came back, he set up this evangelical religion or group.
Did he really? Good God.
And then spent some time visiting other countries to
preach the gospel.
Yeah. And he came to speak to me.
Really?
Yeah. I did say, I can't remember his reply now, but I said to him, listen, you know, when you go outside at night and you go onto your veranda and you look up at the moon and you think, I've been there, you know, I mean, what does that do?
Yeah. 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 Strange concept, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, frankly, in an instant, I would volunteer for a space flight.
You would?
Yeah, no question.
Right, okay.
Having said that, if somebody wanted to volunteer me to go down and have a look at the Titanic, I'd say, get out of
it. I was coming to that.
Yeah. Not a chance. No, but no. Chance to get into space. I mean, that would just be out of this world, obviously.
Yeah, well, totally. Yeah, yeah, literally.
Yeah. Got absolutely gobsmacked.
So you know what? So did the kind of space missions and that, did they influence you? I mean, I know again they did me. You know, as a youth,
yeah,
and as a small boy, I followed the Apollo missions big time. Yeah. I really did.
I can remember, begging my father to let me stay up to watch the Apollo 11 landing because it was about 2 a.m, wasn't it? So I did actually watch that.
I must
admit, the film was a bit rough, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But, I mean, that's, I would say, mind-boggling. It's not. I mean, it's quite understandable how it's done and this, that, and the other. I mean, when you look further into space, when you look, you know, a couple of days ago, they decided that you know, the universe has been in existence for 26 billion years.
Right. Who decided that? That twat, Brian Cox?
No.
Right.
He talks...
I know he does. I can't stand the bloody bloke.
I won't say he talks rubbish, but he doesn't talk in fact. It's all...
Assumption.
Yeah, and computer graphics and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. I mean, the James Webb telescope's got an awful lot to do with it.
Right.
That can see, you know, they reckon that can see within 50 million years to the end of the universe.
Really?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, they're actually seeing stars that are just forming or were just forming.
Right.
At the beginning of the universe. And we can see those now.
Bugger me.
Because the amount of time it takes to get here. It's like, I mean, this is getting a bit technical, but there are three stars in the Orion constellation that are together in a line.
Yeah.
One of them is going to go supernova at some point between now and the next 1,000 years.
Right.
Nobody knows. Could be tomorrow.
Right.
Whatever. But of course, that's already happened.
Yeah, it's just not seeing it because it's not here yet.
It probably happened in 1200 AD or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And we ain't seen it yet. You know, it's just incredible, you know. You just There's no rhyme or reason to it. You just got to accept that these things happen. You know, everybody says, well, what's at the end of the universe? Well, I bloody know. I don't really care, tell you the truth.
Well, no. Well, you see, I think that's the issue I have with this Brian Cox and that other geezer, the wheelchair Eric, Stephen Hawking.
You know,
he was another nuisance, I think, you know, because it's very easy to go out there and lecture on this and that and the rest of it, but none of this can be proven because it can never ever be proven.
No.
You know, and the complete elimination, certainly of Brian Cox, of that any of it is fated and, you know, that Jesus or God doesn't exist is for me a really irritating, annoying bloody statement.
Yeah.
You know, dear, I just can't stand people who kind of attempt to lecture about something that nobody will ever know about.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Things have got to be based on science or fact and the rest of it, haven't they? And just, you know, assumption or technically maths, physics, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's way above my head. But I just think it's, you know, I think it's a bad kind of vibe for me. It really is.
Well, at the end of the day, if you've got a faith, then go with it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Never mind what anybody else
has got. No, totally. Don't matter, does it? No. Not at all.
No.
So is this something that you spend a lot of time at, Dave?
Well, it depends on the weather.
Okay.
That's the big problem.
Yeah.
You know.
So that's about 10 minutes a year then in the UK, isn't it?
I mean, I I've got an app on the phone which gives me a good idea of when you're going to get a clear sky.
Right.
I mean, I'm now lucky that, 12 months ago, I would have to go out, put my tripod out, put the telescope on, and then set everything up and calibrate it and something or the other. And then you'd probably only have 2 hours of photography. Then you have to take it all down and come back in. Whereas now, at least I can leave everything out in the shade.
Because, just for for the people that are listening, I mean, Dave took me for a tour of his observatory.
Yep.
Tonight, which, man, it's kicking. It really is kicking. The whole fucking roof comes back. It's really Tracy Island, Thunderbird.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's brilliant, right, man. I loved it. I could just fuck the stars. I'm quite happy to just play with
just
the roof.
Just play with the remote control.
I mean, that's kicking. And I mean, you built that yourself, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, yes, I built it myself. But, I mean, I actually watched... there are other people who've done it before me and made YouTubes of it.
Yeah.
So there was a guy called Simon, and Simon's Astro, his YouTube channel.
Okay.
And he built his own observatory, and he was a master builder.
Right.
So he knew exactly what to do.
Right.
And literally my friend James and I watched his videos and copied it.
Oh, really? That's how it works?
Yeah.
Right, got it.
Yeah. And, I mean, for instance, the roof rolls back with a... The motor is one of those electric gate motors.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it wasn't working properly, and it was juddering. So I sent an email to the manufacturers and said, look, I've got this problem, it's juddering. Is there a sort of slow start facility on this motor?
Yeah.
And they just sent me this email back saying, nope.
Really?
And that was it.
Fantastic. Oh,
maybe one day our engineers will think about installing something like that.
Right.
So I then sent an email to another YouTuber called Astro Bloke.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I've got this problem.
Astro Bloke.
Yeah. Yeah.
He thought about that, didn't he?
Yeah. So I sent him an email. I said, look, I've got this juddering. You know, have you got any advice? And he sent me a link back to buy a variable resistance piece of kit. So basically, instead of having 240 volt going into this motor, this thing knocks it down to 170, which makes it go slower.
Okay.
Job done.
Right.
Now, why the manufacturers didn't tell me that, they're not interested, are they?
No, not at all.
No. So, it all works very nicely now, yeah.
Fascinating, man. It really is. Excuse me. I find it immensely interesting, and I mean... I'm going to ask you a question that people ask me that I don't really ever really like answering. But because this is such a specialised part of what we do, or the genre of photography, you know, is it a big gig to set this up? Is it an expensive thing? I mean, obviously you need specialist equipment.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not now. I don't look through the telescope.
No.
The telescope has a special camera on the back and it stays on the back.
Right.
Now, there are two ways of doing this. You can, one, be out in the shed all night and freeze your bollocks off.
Yeah.
Or you can, like I do, I've got another shed.
Right.
Which is my warm shed.
Right.
And I sit in there and the equipment works. The telescope has its own onboard computer.
Right.
And it also has autofocus.
Okay.
You use filters in astrophotography. So I've got a filter wheel with filters in it, which moves automatically.
Right.
So basically speaking, you program the computer, you program the telescope to A, start work at a certain time, move to a target which you... set up.
Yeah.
And then press go to start, and then you bugger off down the con club and start playing snooker.
So you've got like a mission control.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Fantastic, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so everything's, you know, everything's automatic now. I mean, if you want to go really, really... And eventually I might do this. You could put a weather station on the shed, so that while the roof is open, if it starts to rain, then the weather station tells the onboard computer, and the computer then closes the roof for you.
Really?
So, yeah. But
so literally, you can go down the con club and
absolutely
knock a few balls in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Bugger me, man.
Not a problem. And as I say, it's quite easy. You know, I mean, it's expensive.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, naturally.
But it's like any other hobby, isn't it? You know, if you, for instance, you know, with your motorbikes,
yeah,
you didn't care how much they cost.
No.
That was your hobby.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Same here, really, you know.
So what do you intend on doing with these collections? You know, are you building up a collection? Do you intend on showing them, or...?
I will, when I get round to it. Unfortunately, the problem is, you know, I need a good set of, you know, a dozen and a half good images.
Yep.
And it takes a while because, this is a bit technical again, but if I want to take photographs of the Andromeda Galaxy, which is in Orion,
yep,
where Orion doesn't appear until November,
okay,
early December, and it'll disappear again below the horizon in April.
Right.
So you've only got a certain amount of time to do that.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, when that's disappeared, something else appears in its place.
Yeah.
And you can get on with that.
Yeah.
So it can take you really a year, 2 years to get a good collection of pictures together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not a quick process.
No.
No.
But, yeah, I'll get round to that. And, I mean, to be fair... I've looked at other people's work, and there's an awful lot of pictures on eBay and Amazon of various constellations that you can buy at, you know, 30, 40 quid a time and hang on your wall. And I look at them and think, I can do better than that.
Yeah.
So I will.
Yeah, definitely. Look forward to the exhibition, man.
Yeah.
Really do.
Well, I don't know about getting into exhibitions.
Well, I mean... I do believe, Dave, that if, you know, if you're putting the work into any of this kind of stuff with any kind of medium, whether it be, you know, paint, sketching, whatever it is, charcoals or photography, it needs to be seen.
Yeah.
You know, you need to get out there and at least do that and say, look, there you go. You know, I've shown people, and I think it's a really... I can't see the point in doing anything unless it has a destination.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Would you not consider that? Because I would imagine that you've got such a vast archive of press images that it's shocking.
Well, I think the problem is, you were obviously gone through exactly the stage as I did, when you first started, you kept all your cuttings.
Yeah.
Then you get pissed off with it, don't you? So for about 20 years, you never saved anything at all, you know. And then after that, you realise it.
You should have done. So you start to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've got a sort of set of pictures. Occasionally, I give talks to local groups and societies. So I've got a sort of, 100, 150 images that I sort of juggle around a little bit, just to make it slightly different. But you can't keep everything.
No,
it's, I mean, it's just impossible.
Well, even more so, I mean, now, Christ almighty, I mean, believe it or not, I've been, over the last couple of 3 years, I've been redoing the will, you know, changed a lot of things. And also because I've got certain kind of requirements. I won't go on too much because this is your show. Not necessarily mine, about what I want the archive to be done with in the event of me having a trip for the co-op, you know? And that's taken some time. But, I mean, I probably estimated I probably got about, you know, 150,000 images.
Yeah.
If you counted every single one.
Yeah.
And, I mean, now with the digital thing, not that I shoot thousands of images, I never do, but you're backing stuff up. You've got to save all this stuff. You've got to put all this shit somewhere, haven't you? You know, you have.
Yeah.
Unless you kind of pick one or two images and bin the fucking rest.
Yeah.
You know. But I don't actually bin any of the kind of the archive of what I shoot of anything. But, you know, when you actually kind of need to put this together to write it into a will or a statement or follow up a will, you know, what you want doing with these things. And, I mean... I know you're lucky enough to have a son and what have you, haven't you? So you've got somewhere where you can hand it down.
Yeah, but do they really? The problem, isn't it? Are they really interested? You know.
Well, you'd like to think so.
I mean, I suppose, you know, maybe they'd hang on to a handful of pictures and think, do I really want all these? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, but when you think about it, Dave, I mean, you know, from a medium point of view, from a photographic point of view, this is a massive brick in the wall of historic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
archive, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, because you know, when it was you joined the Telegraph? What year?
73.
So from 73 to 2023, you have a representation of, we'll say, near on every event that happened in Peterborough or the surrounding area or a little bit further over that period of time.
Yeah.
So that has built up a historic record of events, hasn't it?
Mm.
You know, so for that to actually end up in a fucking cupboard.
In a bin somewhere,
you know, or, well, I'm not really interested what Dad did, you know, is nonsensical.
Yeah.
Which, again, is one of the reasons, plus the fact that I wasn't lucky enough to have a family.
Mm.
You know, I've got nowhere for all this stuff to go.
Yeah. I must admit, I mean, my youngest has got my Rolly. Well, it was Jimmy Oakes's Rolly, actually. Yeah, so he's looking after that, and he'd keep a certain amount of stuff.
Right.
But the problem is, I mean, you're the same. You know, I can take 600-700 pictures in a day.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't hang on to that sort of stuff. It's just impossible.
No.
So, I mean, basically what I do is edit it down to what images I'm going to send into the newspaper.
Yeah.
They archive that, and I save that. And the rest of it goes, I bin my spare images monthly.
Right.
And, you know, you're talking about, you know, 50 gig of images you're chucking away.
Bloody hell.
But you can't hang on to, you
know.
No,
no, no.
I've only got me one PC, you know, and a couple of hard, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, again, I mean, I've got stupid backup facilities, but, you know, obviously I'm very choosy. I don't shoot anything like that volume of images, but it's a different genre of the art, isn't it?
Yeah. But we, I mean, for instance, if I go to a football match, And I'm sitting there next. Now you get a load of agency photographers at football matches. And they're taking pictures of just a player just standing there.
Anything.
Anything, yeah. And you're sitting there and it's all the time. They don't, you know, they must take thousands of pictures. Now, you and I were taught to take a picture when it was worth taking a picture of.
Totally.
So if I cover a match, I'm probably taking 300 pictures.
Yeah.
Bloke sitting next to me working for an agency is probably taking 3,000 pictures.
Yeah.
You know.
That is very much the fad, isn't it, now? It is, you know, well, I mean, not that I associate with other photographers, not at all, but I know some of them, you know, the kind of high-end guys, the guys that are, you know, in my kind of area.
Yeah.
You know, again, they're, you get some of these crazy bastards, you know, well, I took 1,000 shots of that band, or 1,000 shots, you what?
Yeah.
1,000 fucking shots?
Yeah, you've got to look through all those.
You know,
yeah.
That's a nonsense, man.
Mm.
It's a nonsense, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's because you can.
Yeah.
Not because you should.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, the other thing, of course, is when we started, you only had a couple of rolls of film in pocket.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
12 shots on a roll of 120.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got 4 jobs to do on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So you only took.
And it was a bit like your film kind of, we'll say, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, allocation of a day was X amount of films, weren't it? That was it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you, well, what were you shooting more for? What did you do that?
Yeah. Well, you know, when we went to 35 mil, you only got one film because you got because you had 36 shots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know? And if you couldn't do it in that, you know, it was costing the company money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bugger me. Man, plus, of course, then you got to dev all the bastards up when you get back there at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. And didn't we make some cock-ups doing that?
Oh, stone me, man.
I mean,
we've got some stories there, but I think we'll probably save them for the next show day.
Yeah,
I think it's got to be show 3, or should I say part 3 of this, it's got to be story part 3.
Oh, storytelling, yeah. The cock-ups we made.
Oh, totally.
Blimey.
Anyway, for now, Dave, I'd like to thank you yet again, man. It's been a fascinating show. I love to hear you talk, and, you know, so many things that I don't know a lot about. Obviously, the kind of, you know, was it astrological photography?
Yeah. Deep sky astrophotography.
That's it. Deep sky. Yeah. I know about deep throat.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
we'll save that for another show.
Yeah. Yeah. He sent me a message once. Yeah.
Moving swiftly on.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Dave, for coming on.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And a privilege and an honour.
Thank you, Dave.
It really has.
It's really good. Let's do it again, man, and we'll catch up for part 3.
Excellent. Look forward to it.
Wishing you all a good night and stay safe.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, Dave.
Yeah. Cheers, Nick.